Welcome to Dealing, the Bus Lane Antiques podcast. I'm Alex.
And I'm Monty.
And together we run Bus Lane Antiques. We are your hosts of today's episode.
This podcast is going to be about the world of antique jewellery and specifically online dealing. What we like to think of as the other side of antiques. So you have furniture, tables, vases, I don't know, brass telescopes and stuff. The large items, the large things. And then you have antique jewellery, which is what we do. We're going to talk about Butter Lane, the brand, how we built it up from scratch 7 years ago. And you will get to know the two of us. As individuals, we like to keep a fairly low profile on social media. So here we're going to tell our own stories. And spoiler alert, it's a pretty crazy ride with at least one catastrophic life event along the way. Don't think I'm exaggerating there.
So in this episode, we're going to tell you about the very early days, how Monty and myself came together, how we started the brand, who we are as individuals, and one or two behind-the-scenes stories, which are, you know, a bit juicy and a bit fun. And essentially, the story is how we developed, or how we grew, from a very, very basic eBay operation to what has now become a professional e-commerce outfit with extensive social media exposure, a large online presence, you know, things like marketing budgets and
podcasts
and teams of people supporting us, how we grew from eBay to this, and the stories that happened along the way, which are really fun and really interesting.
But before we get into all that, please do follow us on Spotify, or if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, subscribe. And if you like what you hear, give us a good review. It makes a difference. So Alex, your backstory, how did you get into the business?
So it was out of university, of all things.
Warwick
University, yeah. My philosophy degree, which...
Can you remember any of it?
Unfortunate. What do you think? No, I can't. I guess throughout university, I was always found pretty creative ways to make sure I wasn't living like a student.
Side hustles.
You know, yeah, more or less, yeah. I won't go into too much information. Not yet, but another time. So after finishing university, after my degree, of all things, I thought I wanted to be an accountant.
Yeah, I can't get my head around that.
And luckily, strange. I didn't get accepted anywhere. Not the big four. I mean, I wasn't even up there, but I think there was like a top 10 list of accountancy firms.
And you have to do like a further qualification, right? Like an initial exam.
To get on a grad scheme?
Yeah.
Well, it was just, they were just tricky aptitude tests.
Aptitude tests, yeah.
Which I wasn't smart enough at the time to deal with.
Invested enough in the profession, I think we can say.
Thank God, can I say. So after university, I'd become pretty familiar with online trading, mostly through using eBay, selling anything that I could get my hands on, going around charity shops.
Oh, not anything you get. Don't say that.
No, anything I could get my hands on. Anything I could buy that I could see a profit in, essentially.
Yeah.
I must have given that about 3 years, saved up a bit of money, bought a flash car, and moved on my own and probably thought, oh God, I'd actually need to try and get a job now.
You have to pay for this lifestyle.
Yeah.
What car did you buy?
Oh, it was, at the time, it was very top of the range. It was the new model BMW. Oh God, it sounds awful saying that. A 4 Series BMW, you know, 3 litre diesel. Ooh. Oh, nice.
Was it black?
Of course, yeah.
Of course.
With the black tin and the black. It was gangs, you know, it was a drug dealer's car.
Dealing,
yeah. I think my dad must have seen something in me. And the idea was he was going to train me up. So I sort of went and shadowed him, essentially. My dad, of CJ Antiques fame, or Nalfi's fame, which, you know, people familiar with. The CJ online Antiques, community.
One of the first on eBay, when eBay first started. In the 90s,
yeah, exactly.
He started?
But unfortunately, or sorry, fortunately, the shadowing my dad situation didn't really work because he was set in his ways, to put it politely, as a 55-year-old man probably would be.
Yeah, and you wanted to show him the ropes of online selling.
He wasn't interested in new techniques and new flash computers and smartphones, you know, everything that we use now as
Instagram,
as integral sort of tools to the to everyday work. So luckily that didn't work out. But however, I did learn a lot from him, and I used some of the money that I'd saved up from my side hustles, as Monty politely put it.
I think you must be one of the only students to have come out of university with a lump of cash,
yeah,
as opposed to crippling debt.
So I decided to invest some of that money in my dad, who turned up one day at my little terraced house where I was living, and he said, "Right, I've got a good parcel of gear here, as we call it, you know,
jewelry.
We still call it gear, you
still
know.
Call which, it gear.
Unfortunately, the term gear has got a bit of a bad rep. That word.
Oh, I see. This fits in with the title, doesn't it? Dealing, shady connotations.
Yeah, but it's not shady at all. He turned up with some gear and said, "It's 5 grams worth. If you want it, you know, give it a go."
Yeah, it'd be a good starter for you.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly. So
try this online.
Gave him the 5, bought the gear, right? What are we going to do? How am I going to do this?
Did you have an office at this point? No. You're just in your house.
I think I did have an office because there was still an eBay operation. There was already an eBay operation.
Yeah, it wasn't
related
office.
To jewellery.
It was your,
another office. It was clothes.
Fashion empire.
Finer threads.
The rag trade. Yeah, okay. So you had the office off that.
Wow. I didn't think you were going to bring that up.
So it's a good name.
Finer Threads.
It's a good name.
And Finer Threads turned, when the jewellery moved into Finer Threads, it turned to Finer Threads and Jewels.
Really? I didn't know that.
It did, yeah.
Oh,
it did.
Wow.
I rebranded
I rebranded
a dead horse.
Oh, so was there overlap between the
clothes
and
jewellery? Yeah, I was trying to sell the jewellery on the clothes website. This is how crazy it was.
Right, there was
nothing going on. It was dead. Luckily, eBay was good at the time, and I thought, right, you know, I was petrified of having £5,000 invested in
a very small bag of what looked like a very small bag.
Three diamond rings and a string of pearls and whatever else it was.
Yeah.
So, right, I need to get my house in to get here. And eBay was the way. So that, and then luckily, off that 5,000 investment, as it happens on eBay with the bidding, with the auction, started everything on an auction. No one would be able to verify this. I think I decided to 99p the beginning one.
High risk, high reward.
I think I had it covered. But I actually think a couple ran away.
Yeah.
And I think I ended up earning £3,000 off the initial 5.
Off the 5.
Yeah, so I took it out and I thought, bloody hell, this is...
Yeah, some
this jewellery is actually all right. You know? I mean, I'd watched my dad do it, but my dad was just doing it his way, and I had no involvement of the finance side. I didn't know how much he was really buying things for. I just used to watch his employees take the pictures, and the process, got familiar with the process.
Yeah.
And I thought, bloody hell, this has got legs, this jewellery business. But
So this is a 7-day auction, start at 99p. Essentially,
you know, big diamond, you know, expensive things, no reserves. Yeah, you could absolutely, you know.
Yeah.
I remember I lay it all out on the table in front of me. I'm like, right, I need to work this out somehow to be costing me 5 grand. So I was like, right, well, that one's got diamonds in. That one can be, you know, £900.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very, very
It sounds like your dad.
Amateur sort of thing.
Got you off.
Yeah, I think,
to a good
let's
start.
Just say, I think he was looking out for me, you know, like, he wanted me to do well off it. I think there was a few little... mind the pun. I think there was a couple of hidden gems in there. I think he knew there was good profit in there, which, what a great way. It was, you know, I had to stump the money up. I already had a huge interest because it was my own cash.
Yeah.
There was, you know, there was no, here we go, try this.
Yeah.
See how you get on. It was paid for and it was done. It was, you know, it had to work, but I think exactly like you just said. And yeah, 5,000 turned to 8,000 in 7 days off 99p auctions. And then all of a sudden I had a model. I think I've worked it out. You know, the way I do with everything, working out every individual, the profit per piece of, say, the 6 pieces in the parcel. I was like, well, if I can replicate that 150 times a week, then, you know, I'm going to be earning about...
You do have a tendency to micro...
£3 million a year.
Microanalyze. Everything is
microanalysis by the is day my way. Yeah.
Maybe it's come from that. Micro-analyze,
but not micromanage. That's, you know, that's my my motto.
Oh, I could never accuse you of micromanaging.
No. So they were that was eBay, and they were the very early days. That's what taught me to buy and sell.
Mm-hmm.
In a different way to we do it now, but that was the very beginning of it.
Mm-hmm. So I'm Monty. I am actually also called Alex. My name is not Monty, but we were getting just the two of us in the office, both called Alex. You know, people would call up, hello, can I speak to Alex? Yes, speaking. And then they'd just go off on some tangent. I have no idea, you know. It was getting very confusing in the office.
Yeah.
Was made.
The praise department. You know, we didn't know who was actually getting the praise.
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah, it was definitely me.
Oh, the complaints department. It must be the umbrella.
Long story short, we decided that I would choose a different name. I chose Monty because I'm a big fan of Monty Don of BBC Gardener's World fame. My wife watches it religiously whilst I'm in the garden watering the plants.
So do you think your wife's got a type? She's obsessed with Monty Don and you're in the garden watering the plants.
No, I jest. It's not really like that. But Monty Don did used to sell jewellery, costume jewellery. So before he, hit the big time on the silver screen, he had a...
On BBC Two on a Sunday afternoon.
But yeah, sure. some days I do regret it because it's...
Don't let him deceive you. He's only 30. He's not 19.
It is a bit of a silly name. And I'm sorry to all of the Montys out there listening, but it's an old-fashioned sounding name, which was part of the reason of picking it. You know, if we sell Victorian jewellery, I'll pick a Victorian name, whatever. So I started work at Butter Lane Antiques before it was Butter Lane Antiques, actually, when I started.
In the eBay days.
Yeah. In the eBay days.
Nalfi 2,
that's right. I was working in a well-known electronics and computer shop.
I think you can just say stuff, it doesn't.
I was working in PC World, came out of university, first job in retail. Absolutely hated it because I was asked to sell people insurance and antivirus software that they didn't want or need, and I was sort of objected to that. The guy that did my job before me, who used to work for Alex, I was sitting chatting with him in a pub, and he said, Alex is looking to expand the business and he wants to hire someone new. And he's on my back about it. He keeps getting me to try and, you know, find someone else. And I was like, I'll do it. Sign me up. What do I have to do?
I didn't actually know that. I didn't know how.
We were sort of mutual acquaintances at the time. And I didn't really know the guy, but I was like, yeah, you know, I'm happy to, you know, I'll do it. And I thought, I presumably thought I was joking, but the next morning I sent him a text being like, no, seriously, like if you're, you know, if you're looking for someone, right, then like, yeah, I'll come and do an interview or whatever.
I remember the interview, as with my brother.
Came and did the interview straight from PC World on the bike to Alex's office.
What was your impression? What did you think? Jesus, what's going on here?
Of you, no, you presented yourself very well. You were gregarious and you seemed to know what you were talking about. You were with your brother was there.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah, right. So I rock up like on the bike, push bike, shorts, knock on the door, see the receptionist, say, I'm here to see Alex. And she said, oh yeah, he's expecting you. I'll just go through and do you know where to go? No idea where to go. I was like, is there a changing room or something? And she's like, no, we don't have changing rooms here.
It's a place. Oh my God.
So I knock on your door and I say, look, I'm in shorts.
The first offices were
I'm in shorts and a t-shirt for this interview. Like, I'm really sorry. Can I go and change? And you're like, no, just take a seat. Sit down. And yeah, took it from there. Got the job.
That was it, yeah. The rest is history.
The rest, as they say, is history. I didn't know anything about antique jewellery. Yeah. I mean, to be honest, my wife does have an antique engagement ring, which...
Did you know that it was antique or was it just an
antique? Yeah, no, I knew it was antique. Went to a, can I say it again, like well-known antiques dealer in Edinburgh. And they definitely charged me more than I should have paid for it, actually, say that.
How in code?
Right. Well, I'm not going to do it in code. We were students at university, paid £700 for the engagement ring, everything I had.
It's at the time. That's a lot. How old? 18?
At that point, I was second year, so I was 19, yeah.
19 years old, yeah. And at uni.
It's a ring.
I think that's a pretty respectable effort, to be honest.
But you'd have paid no more than $250 for that ring, so put it that way.
Well, yeah.
It's a good markup.
Profit's not a dirty word.
But anyway, enough about me.
Yeah, sorry. Not that it's boring me, but I think we need to talk about the brand itself.
That's why we're here.
Yeah. Let's talk about Butter Lane. Obviously, we are largely an online-facing brand business and have grown alongside, you know, grown with each other sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. I mean, basically, at the start, you wanted to get away from eBay.
Yeah, eBay basically had its own. Anyone that's familiar with eBay will know it had its own set of unique problems that you couldn't get around. Mainly the customer base.
Not mainly the customer base, but there were a few
problematic situations.
Absolutely, yeah. Where people were just unreasonable. Come on.
So go. The memo was: we need to stop eBay. We need to be standing on our own 2 feet. We need to not be relying on a third-party website to sell our goods.
So we wanted our own site, our own branding, and basically it was early on. So while we were still on eBay, you said, how about this Instagram? Well, I've got this Instagram account. I've put some jewelry stuff. It was your personal Instagram account. I've put some jewelry on it, but, you know, why don't we give that a try? And
was it as haphazard as that? Why don't we give that a try?
Well, I remember. So in our first office, there was a whiteboard on the wall, and the whiteboard was basically used for two things,
passwords.
Or three things. Yeah, passwords, keeping track of layaways.
Oh my god! Yeah,
and also a sort of to-do list. So there was Alex to do at the time because I wasn't Monty.
Monty hadn't been bored.
And one of the points on there for me was social media. And there were three sub-points underneath that, which was Twitter, Instagram, Pinterest. I mean, I sort of looked at them and I didn't really know what Instagram was at the time. Obviously, I knew what Twitter was. Pinterest.
Yeah, it was in the Twitter time.
I still don't really know what Pinterest is. But basically, looking at the platforms, Instagram's dead visual. I was like, all right, let's take some pictures. So for eBay, the pictures were a certain way. By our current standards, they were crap, but you know,
Ooh.
The empire was built on the back of those pictures. But anyway, so for Instagram, I was like, okay, we have to sort of spice up these pictures a bit, like get a bit, you know, creative with. So I'd like, you know, take one of Alice's scarves in the next day and sit a piece of jewelry on the scarf
I used to buy the Hermes. We used to use those as backdrops. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, so it was. Let's get a bit creative with the photography.
Yep.
And
go onto social media.
Give this social media thing a go.
Your personal account, 400 followers at the time.
Yeah.
And we sort of made a thing. Okay, let's do a couple posts a day of the nicer bits on there, and see what happens. We were definitely still eBay backbone. I think we probably had started the brand at this point. Chosen the name,
which has a wealth of history itself. I don't know whether that's...
yeah, let's talk about that now. Okay, so why is it called Butter Lane? Go on.
So Butter Lane, it is an actual place. It's a road in Manchester.
It is, I've been there.
It's
not much there now. There's a Korean restaurant.
Sorry?
There's a Korean restaurant.
It is a Korean... Well, it used to be Butter Lane Antiques Market was the first... Oh, I think the central hub of jewellery dealing back in the, I don't know if I want to put dates to, but I'd say, sorry if this offends anyone, back in the 50s or 60s, which incidentally is where my nana on my dad's side, my Italian grandmother, that's where she started out. So there's a wealth of family history in Butter Lane.
So it was like an antiques market.
It was a market, yeah, like the galleries on Portobello Road.
Yeah, right.
But in Manchester, sadly,
different
it's not
traders,
here
sole traders.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Pitching up different niches.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, yeah. Every day. My dad's dad was the manager of Butter Lane Antiques, of not this Butter Lane, of yeah, the yeah, market. Yeah. You know,
I did not know that. Yeah, well, that's interesting.
And Dad was hanging around there because he couldn't keep himself in school. Does that surprise you?
No, not at all.
So, and then he got started, and that's where he gained the majority of his experience.
But hold on, your nana was selling those creepy dolls.
Nonna.
Nonna, yeah, of course.
Creepy dolls, yeah.
Italian nonna. The like...
pot dolls.
Painted that, face, like yeah, exactly, porcelain
yeah.
face ones.
Yeah, that sort of the types of things you see in your nightmares.
Yeah, or like horror films and stuff.
Yeah, exactly. So when we had the... I used to go to my dad's in the evening to help him with to go through the eBay listings, his eBay listings, which was my part of my shadowing internship.
Training.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Mm-hmm. My work experience, as he calls it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, right, me and Monty are going to get going with, we need to get away from eBay. And those words to my dad, and still are a petrifying, you know, getting away from eBay.
To him.
To him, yeah. And oh, you don't want to get away from eBay. So eBay has been good to us.
Yeah. Still on eBay. CJ Antiques.
Yeah.
Big presence. Representing.
So we're talking about different names. We talk as a family, probably a few glasses of wine were being shared. I don't know. What should we do? What should we do? And at the time, there were a couple that we were dealing with somehow, some way, down in the Cotswolds. And I was trying to think of something quirky, something that was great and going to stick in people's minds. And I think my dad actually said it. He's like, what about Bustelade Antiques? And, you know, when someone just says something and you're like, that's the one. That's the one. I was like, yeah, actually, that's great. And I remember leaving that night and being like, that's it, Bustelade Antiques.
Yeah. And I remember you coming in the next morning and sitting down and saying, right, I've got it. I've got, because, you know, it's this happened, was an ongoing, yeah. What we're going to call it? Oh, an ongoing thing. Can't call it Alfieri Antiques, you know. And you're like, right, Butter Lane. I was kind of like, what?
But I think once you explain the history behind it, it's a bit of a silly name.
But you're like, Butter Lane. I was kind of like, Butter, okay, yeah, I like it. It's kind of weird and like,
it's quirky. Why? In English. And,
yeah.
You know, it ticked a lot of boxes.
Yeah.
And you have to remember that the motivation behind the brand itself was to form a 21st century style of dealing.
Yeah. Contemporary.
Contemporary. So,
based off the back of your experience with finer threads and, you know.
Well, we've not, yeah.
Turning exactly. over stock, not wanting to sit on stock for too long and. How old were you?
Well, become a social facing brand. 20s? You know, there's so many brands out there at the moment that are social. Even back in 2013, when this was, that were social facing.
Yeah.
Fast fashion, all the Manchester rag trade brands that are massive.
Yeah.
I think with finer threads, that was initially my thought, you know, like, oh, I'm going to be the next so-so.
Yeah.
Couldn't have been, you know. Was so wrong, was so off the mark. But we did grow with the rise of social media and the rise
Absolutely.
Of Insta. And, you know, Insta's been amazing.
When we started on Instagram, which is, I guess, going back to what we were talking about before we went into Butter Lane, you know, we went from 400 followers to 4,000 followers in 3 months. And we went from 4,000 followers to 20,000 followers in, you know, the next...
Yeah, exactly.
Next nine.
And then it was all trial. It wasn't trial and error, but, I mean, it was...
No, we didn't know what we were doing. We were just
It was
looking around, fumbling around.
It was fumbling around with very little money, very little capital.
Yeah,
trying to keep enough stock in to pay the wages and everything else, and it being a huge stress and the stresses that every new business sort of faces, I guess. You know, financial management, cash flow management. You know, which incidentally are actually still problems today. But
oh, of course,
I think we've got a bit better at it.
But what's interesting for me is in those early days. Basically, I came into this business, knew nothing about it. So I was learning on the job, and you essentially gave me a remit, which was, I want to build a brand. I want a new website. I'm going to allow you to go off and do your own thing, allocate your own times. But, you know, if you need to buy anything, a new camera to make the pictures look better, fine, do it. You know, I'm going to put this in your hands and...
I was terribly trusting on me. Not terribly trusting.
Oh, it was terribly trusting on you, but it was a fantastic way for me to work because I was able to learn new skills, you know. Yeah. I built that first website from scratch and that was learning.
Yeah, I would have taken credit for, you know, I got you off with the photography.
Absolutely, yeah. You said,
but
right.
I taught you initially. That is wild. I was like, this is what we're going to do. And
macro lens I'd never touched on before. Lightroom, I was kind of like, all right, well, let's give this a go. And he basically said, you know, spend an afternoon, do some Googling, look, you know, work out how to get pictures that look like this. And you pointed to some high street jewelry.
What time did we used to work till back then, back in the early days? It was...
Well, I'd make sure I was in before 10.
Yeah, that was the rule, yeah.
The rule
before
was,
I got in at 10, you know.
You know, you can leave whenever you've got the work done. So some days it would be 4, some days it would be 7. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Depending on the workload.
And that credits my dad. That is my dad's management style. So they were things I learned from him, you know, just don't be crazy about it. Just get the job done and then have a beer and go home, whatever.
Absolutely.
Which is generally what we did. And we had a laugh in the...
So yeah, going back to Instagram, I mean, it was very much the right place, the right time.
It was fluke. We could say it was hard work.
At first it was fluke.
It was hard work, but a lot of luck to be in a position to be able to take risks at that time.
Yeah. And at that time, the Instagram community was really sort of kicking off. Now, if you do a bit of research on Instagram, there is a big community of online antiques dealers and enthusiasts on there. When we started, that was really sort of taking off, and we rode that wave, really. I mean, eventually it became clear that there were two important things to grow our brand on Instagram, and that was quality content and consistency.
Consistency, yeah.
And we made sure that every day we were posting quality content.
Sorry to interrupt you. The formula, even today, is still the same, you know.
Absolutely.
Fresh jewelry.
Yep.
Quality pictures.
Interesting pieces.
Interesting, with a backstory, with something nice to read, with something to sort of entertain.
Absolutely.
Well-priced.
Absolutely. So, yeah, I mean, like you say, the model hasn't changed too much, but the quality of the goods has. And yeah,
apart from that, we have marketing budgets and stuff like that, which...
We have marketing budgets, yeah, I suppose. This podcast is a testament to that.
Yeah.
And here we are, 90,000 followers in. I still don't know how we got here, but here we are. It's the backbone of our business. We've gone from eBay to building a brand. Our customer base is predominantly in the US, which did come off the back of eBay, really. I mean, it was always from day one pitched to eBay.com as opposed to eBay.co.uk. So we were always pitching at the American market.
Because that's what CJ had always done.
Yeah, that was your dad's first.
So, you know, I was actually learning something in those 6 months. And then I decided to go over to New York to meet Beth Bernstein.
Beth, yeah.
Yeah.
Our friend, jewellery author, extraordinaire.
And she set up a, I guess now we'd call it a pop-up in her beautiful,
It was in her apartment, wasn't it?
In her apartment, yeah, East Side, typically New York apartment.
Mm-hmm.
And
this before you go into that.
She invited people that I had never met. So I was sort of like, right, I've got to turn it on now, you know. I've got to be on my A game. I had a table. I'd already shipped all the stock.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. So I was responsible for parceling up everything, our entire stock, everything in the safe, into two FedEx packages.
Oh, wow.
Going through the customs forms, writing out all the details.
I wonder what the value was. I mean, this was so early days. This was probably 2015?
It was probably 2015, yeah, I think so.
Or 14.
Thereabouts.
Just after. Was Buttelane a... Was that a...
Yeah, we were Buttelane at that point. I think it was about a year and a half after I started working for you. So we were Buttelane, early days. You had said, right...
Loads of stock, no money.
I've got this contact in New York. We're going to go and break them out. We're going to go and do it. She's going to link me up with all these different contacts over there. I'm going to take all the stock. At this point, my jaw dropped.
We're giving Beth favourable layaway terms. So she was like, I'll help you one day. You know, I'll help you. So actually, Beth has got... You know, Beth holds a lot of importance in this whole thing.
Absolutely. But when you said to me you were going to take all the stock,
I was a naive risk taker, I guess.
So I had to hand these two FedEx boxes. I don't know if you're familiar with FedEx, but medium boxes. They're not very big. All of it, everything in it, to our FedEx guy, who was great, Lee. I just handed everything to him. And you weren't in the office that day, but...
I was probably...
Fear. That was...
It could have been the whole thing done.
And it was an overnight service. So we can ship stuff overnight to New York.
Shipping to...
To Beth.
To Beth, right.
Yep. And that was, hand on heart, the most stressful 18 hours of my life, probably.
I interject. The flight was the most stressful for me.
For you, yeah. Well, yeah, okay.
Thinking, right, I've got to, you know... This is, so I've met Beth.
Mm-hmm.
Beth met me at the airport. I just got in a cab. I was just no idea. I was just, you know, nothing to it. Just thought, right, I think I had a pocket, you know, probably had $1,000 in my pocket.
The
right.
License plate said fresh.
Yeah, that's it. Turned up to Beth's apartment. She's like, right, she had very kindly laid everything, presented it so beautifully.
Our stock.
Yeah, which I think was pretty poor at the time. But no, there was some early stuff. There was a few interesting bits.
It was in English antique jewellery from the source.
Yeah, it was cheap. York, it was well priced. You know, it was well priced. It was a brave move.
The presentation was very good. We still have those cigar boxes with the little.
Yeah, we still use them, actually. I can see one there.
Yeah.
Nice. And Beth was like, right, the first people are turning up in half an hour. And I was looking at things thinking, oh, you can't have that there. You know, that's too much. Or that's isn't a good representation of, I guess it's the equivalent of like a runway show in the fashion industry.
Absolutely.
And first person, it was Look and Lockett's.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
She was the first person that, wow. I don't think I actually managed to, I think I possibly sold her in the yellow chain.
Right.
The next most important, not most important, but who became very important, Erica and Lindsay.
So that's Lindsay and Erica, the girls from ericawinner.com. They've been an inspiration to us for a long time now, one of the best in the game. They used to have shops in New York, but they're mainly online now.
I couldn't believe it. Like, Erica was just, you know, yeah, that's fine. You know, knew exactly what she wanted, and I was just like, wow, this is amazing.
Lindsay and Erica are great, yeah. We're still good friends with them all these years after.
Yeah, they still come over to stay every night, normally once a year.
Mm-hmm.
Then, it was an amazingly successful trip, actually. Sold a bunch of stuff. There was a big show on one of the peer shows.
Yeah.
And I just walked around with a bag of stuff, a bag of gear. And
I mean, it was really the importance of the trip was making contacts, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. And
in the train, and, you know, the US.
Lindsay,
trade.
Especially, you know, as the buyer for Erica Wiener.
I mean, we haven't gone into that too much, but at the time, our business was based not solely, but a large part of the business was to the trade.
Yeah, the trade list.
Yeah, the trade list.
Oh, the trade list is great. And then Lindsay, I remember saying to me once, I've created a monster here. Because all of a sudden I was like, what's the point in selling, you know, working all day in back in the UK to trade everything out for less than 10% profit, essentially.
Yeah.
When we could, you know, we could retail it ourselves. And we that's when we sort of started
becoming
more of a retail
was,
from...
eBay was sort of taken over by the trade side of it.
Yeah.
So eBay went from being our backbone to selling to trade being our backbone. You know, you'd come back from a fair, you'd spent 20 grand on stock, and if we could flip out 10 grand of that to the trade...
I think that was a bit different. I think it was like, I'd spent 20 grand on stock with probably only 10 grand in the bank.
Well,
the pressure was on. I used to go back to my apartment in Chorlton and be like,
wow, I've got to
get my house into gear quick.
10 grand before those checks clear in 3 days' time. And
so they were the early days. That was
selling to trade as we were building our brand on the other side. And eventually it got to a point where...
We made an executive decision to phase the trade out.
Yeah.
Because we preferred
And we had a big enough
retail.
Exposure, we had a big enough customer base that we could
and we could
sustain
learn
ourselves
from the trade
through
side. Yeah. It was good. It was great. It's all part of the story, you know. It was all part of the struggle.
Absolutely.
And we're still struggling now, actually, which I think I'm going to struggle in a minute.
Okay, so that, yeah, we've talked about Butter Lane now, the early days, how we got to where we are. What we'd like to do next is, and this is going to be a weekly thing.
I did you last week.
For the pilot, I was on the receiving end of this. Basically, I'm going to ask Alex a question, not related to jewelry.
Totally unrehearsed.
It will be a little window on his psyche, maybe. We'll see. Okay, so without further ado.
Go easy on me, mate.
All right, so...
Do I need to, you know, shall I pour myself a...
Without further ado, so you have a dinner party. You can invite four people, living or dead, to be around the table to join you.
Oh, wow.
Who's it going to be?
Wow. That's terribly unoriginal of you, should I say. I had a suspicious feeling this could have been it.
If I flip the script.
Four people.
Yep.
Okay. Dead or alive. Number one would have to be my first guess, but despite apparently she was quite my dad's mum, my grandmother, on my paternal grandmother.
Nonna.
Mm-hmm. who used to sell at Butter Lane Antiques.
Did you know Nonna? Did you know Nonna?
Or? Well, I did, but she had very, what's the word, like onset Parkinson's disease when I knew her, so okay. I was very young.
Sure.
And so unable to communicate, but that'd be a good guess.
Yeah, Nonna would be there with her crazy dolls.
So, and I could, you know, I could find out what Butter Lane Antiques was actually like.
Yeah.
You know, as a marketplace.
Yeah.
I think that'd be a cool guess. So that'd be my first guess.
What kind of tricks your dad got up to that he's not telling you about?
Yeah, exactly, yeah. There is a lady still at Portobello that was friends with my dad's mum that I still see. Julie McNamara.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And she tells me about some stories about when he was a youth. So she'd be guest number one. Guest number two... Wow. Can I make it more about the back to jewellery?
Well, I mean, it's supposed to be non-jewellery related, but I suppose...
Could be, you know, what are the...
Given the context of the question, yeah. You can have... Yeah.
Okay. What about Carl Fabergé in his heyday, his business was massively operational and...
So like an elder Carl Fabergé, so you can talk to him about...
Well, how he got that thing going...
Yeah, nice.
That'd be an interesting guest.
Okay, so we've got Nonna, we've got Fabergé himself. Guest three?
An actor that I've loved and he is actually dead, unfortunately.
You've had two dead, so it's fine. They can all be dead.
I've had two dead.
Yeah. You can have four dead if you want, that's all right.
James Gandolfini.
Nice, nice. Soprano.
Obviously, yeah. Tony Soprano. Out of character as himself. I think he died about 3 or 4 years ago, something like that.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't stipulate that. Like, I suppose, now for your fourth, you've got one more to choose from.
Got to be alive.
It could be a fictional character if you want as well. It's alive or dead.
Oh, come on.
Or that, fictional. That, so, yeah, you could be like Sherlock Holmes or whatever. But...
Mate, well, I'm not that clever.
Hey, Sherlock Holmes is like trash Victorian literature. Trash.
Is all you and Alice read to each other.
I have read all of the Sherlock Holmes, but this is about you anyway. Fourth, number four.
What about who would I love to go to dinner with?
But maybe at this point you should be thinking about...
It's tremendously difficult to actually think on the spot of... No, I know. Sorry. Easy. I'm so sorry that this blew over my head.
Go on.
One of my biggest... He's not an influence because I don't know him, but a business owner out there that I... What? Love? I wasn't going to say love it. No, a business owner that I follow closely. Have followed close. Listen to his story a lot.
Mm.
Mr. Represent, of course. George Heaton.
Mr.
George Heaton.
Yeah, good.
He would definitely be there, and we'd get on. I can tell we would.
So Represent Clo, proper English brand.
A Manchester brand.
Manchester brand,
a social-facing Manchester clothing brand.
Yep. George and Mike.
Yeah, they're brothers. Yeah.
Okay, so we've got George Heaton.
George Heaton.
We've got Nonna.
Nonna, who's my grandma.
We've got Carl Fabergé.
Carl Fabergé. The greatest ever jeweller.
Is Carl Fabergé your... Top dog, number one, best ever.
I don't think he's just I think he just is, isn't he? Like it's not really a... It's more that is just the way it is. You know, he has created some of the finest pieces of jewelry.
You're your father's son.
The apple doesn't fall from the tree.
Alexander.
George Heaton. But I'm forgetting now.
George Heaton.
Yeah.
Nonna. Carl Fabergé.
Carl Fabergé.
And it wasn't Action Bronson, was it? It was...
I don't think I said a third. I think that's only three. I didn't say a third. James Gandolfini.
You did, yeah.
Oh, James Gandolfini. James Gandolfini, my paternal grandmother, George Eaton.
Yeah. Carl Fabergé.
Fabergé, sorry. Wow. that is actually, that was harder than the question I got asked in my interview for Cambridge University.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. Well, heart on your sleeve there. So one final wrap-up question to that. What are you going to serve as a main course?
Food?
Yeah.
I'd do a vodka pasta, actually. That's my...
Vodka pasta.
Vodka pasta,
nice.
I think my nonna and James Gandolfini would be happy with that.
I've never tried your vodka pasta, but I've heard that
you have tried my vodka pasta, actually, because I brought you Tupperwares in.
That's fair. I've tried it the next day for lunch, all right. And it is good. It is good. Sensational. Okay, I enjoyed that.
That question was...
You didn't squirm too much, but it's a tough question, isn't it? It's a tough question on the spot.
Especially when, just to give you a bit of context, he's listening. I asked Monty that last week on our pilot run-through episode.
Yeah.
So I really should have been better prepared for the same question. Next week it's on
back.
You.
I'm back next week, yeah. All right. So thank you for listening to the first episode of...
Is that done?
Dealing...
Are we done? Wow, yeah, we're done.
Yeah, I think
we're
done.
I feel there's so much more to go into, you know.
Well, I think this is the outro for this week.
Right.
There is so much more to go into, and we've got 9 more episodes to do it. So thank you, everyone, for listening. Next week, we're going to dive into dealing. You'll hear stories of the highs, lows, mistakes, and sales that have influenced who we are today. We release episodes on Tuesdays, but make sure you subscribe. That's subscribe on Spotify and follow on Apple Music. I don't know which way around it is. Maybe it's follow on Spotify and subscribe on Apple Music. So you're reminded when a new episode is released, and be sure to follow us on Instagram, Bottle and Antiques, across social media. We're on Facebook as well. And of course, check out our pieces on bottleandantiques.com.
And if you want to get on the layaway board,
layaways are open.
That's a joke. That's getting edited out.
We'll see.
Okay, that's great. So we're done. Is that a wrap? Is that what we say?